As I was saying, the South Asian community is one of the largest in this city. We have South Asian films, food, and music as part of our Toronto landscape, but it was not always thus, as some people we hear from can soon attest. Few of them remember a time when seeing another brown person was a reason to get excited. As part of South Asian Heritage Month, we invited people from the community to talk about what matters to them as their world continues to grow within the world of Toronto. We recorded that conversation, and we're calling it Visible Majority, Toronto's growing South Asian community, and we'll be playing highlights throughout today's program. My six guests are Nita Bawa. She co-hosts a radio program called Asian Connections. The show is broadcast in Hindi and Punjabi and deals with social issues within the South Asian community. Kulveer Singh Gill is 27. He works for a major Canadian mining company, and he's also director of the Sikh Centennial Foundation. Dr. Amita Handa is a professor at the University of Toronto, is also the host of CKLN's radio music show Masala Mix. Rima Kaur is a producer with Omni Television. Srinivas Krishna is a filmmaker. His 1991 film Masala was inspired by the Air India disaster. And Akash Maharaj is the former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada. I started by asking, what does the description South Asian mean to you? Anita Bawa jumped in first with her thoughts.
I moved to Canada in 1996, and I had never heard of this term South Asian until I moved here, because I only identified myself as an Indian, and that's what I identify myself even today, as an Indian.
I would have to agree. I mean, I came in 1970 as a kid when I was 5 years old, and I frankly just want to be known as a Canadian, and everything else can come thereafter.
But that's what you want to be known, but that's what it is. I mean,
well, there's a huge difference between our desires and reality, isn't there?
And I think that's the key. A South Asian identity is an identity that is created by the perception of others from outside the community. But having said that, I do actually think of myself as a South Asian Canadian, as distinct from, for example, an Indo-Canadian or a Caribbean Canadian. I think everyone likes to be called as an individual, but there's no escaping the fact that in a multicultural society, people will always be seen as being a member of a group. The question is, to which group do you choose to attach yourself within the Canadian mosaic? And I don't think South Asian is a bad label. I think that there is one thing on the negative side all South Asian have in common, that we all look brown to people who are not South Asian. But from a positive side, all South Asians are also descended from a common, albeit ancient, civilization.
Dr. Handa, you work with adolescent girls, and there is something called the global teenager. They want to belong to the world culture of being a kid. Do they identify as South Asians, the girls you work with?
I think some do and some don't. Some might identify with their individual ethnic identity, and some might identify with South Asian. But I'd have to agree that I think this is a term that's very interesting, because you're South Asian in Canada, you're Asian in England, you're Indian in Trinidad. And when I'm in India, I'm Canadian, because suddenly I'm not someone who's grown up there. But in some ways, I do identify with the term because it's a political term. So I think that in order to maybe organize or mobilize ourselves sometimes as a community, we need some kind of umbrella term to sort of come together as. But that doesn't mean we don't have individual differences.
I think there is a place for the South Asian term, but we need to be very careful not to apply it to all situations and all areas. I think there's a common thread that Akash referred to, that we do have a common thread, but it cannot be the one moniker that we use in all situations. In many cases, I'm a Canadian. In many cases, I'm a Sikh, a Punjabi, and in some cases, I'm a South Asian.
Rima?
I actually look forward to the day where we can be called Indians or Pakistani or Trinidadians. I find the word South Asian paints us with one broad stroke, and I think there's so much diversity amongst us. You know, even from a region perspective, a Bengali is very different from a Punjabi, a Gujarati is very different from a Malayali, and I think the mainstream needs to understand that a little bit more.
It's interesting that you say the mainstream. Going back, I guess, to what you said, Akash, people of color are going to, in fact, be the majority. Srinivas?
I think where South Asian becomes a very useful and an even necessary identity is not cultural but political. You know, and in that regard, because one is seen to be of a group, whether one likes to or not, as much as I want to say I'm Canadian, as you pointed out, Akash, you know, you are seen to be South Asian, whether you like it or not, well, then you have to take on that identity on one level or another. You're forced to, and I say that place is not cultural but political.
But I think that Canada is extremely well placed to adapt to this change. Canada has always been a multicultural society, albeit in the 19th century, multicultural meant Protestants and Catholics. today, it means multi-ethnicity. But this really is, although at each generation has faced the opportunity to challenge what it means to be a multicultural and multi-ethnic society. And I think if you look at the basis of Canada, unlike old world countries, we weren't formed or called into being out of a common ethnicity or a common language or the determinism of geography or accents of history. We were created fundamentally 140 years ago as a political federation, as a country that was based on the idea that it would be possible to have a new kind of state where people are stronger together, not in spite of their differences, but precisely because of their differences.
What country are you talking about, by the way?
I think if you were to go back to the fathers of Confederation, they would be astounded and some of them would be horrified to see the lengths to which that celebration of differences has come.
That was Akash Maharaj, the former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada, and we'll have more from our South Asian community panel in the next half hour. Coming up, we'll hear about some of the intergenerational tensions, tensions caused by such issues as gay marriage and how the community is dealing with these tensions. And we're back to our conversation in this, our discussion of the visible minority, Toronto's growing South Asian community. And I said minority, I meant majority. That's where it's going. This is part of a conversation I had last week with people from this city's South Asian community. Nita Bawa co-hosts a call-in radio program in Hindi and Punjabi called Asian Connections. Kulveer Singh Gill is a director of the Sikh Centennial Foundation. Amita Handa is a professor at the U of T. Rima Kar is a journalist. She works at Omni TV. Srinivas Krishna is a filmmaker. His 1991 feature film Masala, inspired by the Air India disaster. And Akash Maharaj is the former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada. They had a lot to say about the changes and challenges facing a new generation of South Asians. Rima Kar began by talking about the contrast between growing up in the 1970s in Calgary and what she sees in the GTA today.
One of the things that I really believe is that the way you were brought up, it also depends on if you're a South Asian out west in a smaller city as opposed to Toronto, growing up in Brampton. I grew up in Calgary. You know, I was one out of two South Asian kids in my class. And it definitely there was much more of an influence from what I said, mainstream Canadian culture.
The homogenizing factor.
The assimilating pressure,
yeah,
I think.
Absolutely. And then when you grow up in Brampton, I think you have more of a community around you and more of a support for certain things, which we didn't.
I think the immigrant experience is changing. The first immigrants, South Asians that came to Canada in the early 1900s, were forced almost to assimilate as a matter of survival. There was no concept of trying to maintain our own and try to live on our own, because getting a job meant you had to cut your hair if you were a Sikh, because there's no other way you're going to get a job. But things have changed now. I think you go to areas like Brampton or Mississauga, and you find that out of a school of a class of 30 kids, you'll find over half of them are South Asian. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different experience growing up.
Nita Bawa, you on your Open Line show have dealt, among other things, with intermarriage, something that might have been unthinkable where some of these families came from. But it's not only thinkable, but, well, is it still taboo here?
It is absolutely a taboo, and especially the taboo of marriages is between Hindus and Muslims. That is the most deadly combination, I would say.
Well, Nita, I just wanted to bring up something that I thought, Nita, you would have something to say about sure, in terms of, you know, generational conflict and assimilating and not assimilating. Something that I think all Canadians will understand is the issue of gay marriage and its impact and the response to it in South Asian communities. What have you heard on your radio show?
Well, gay marriages, again, these are things that, you know, people don't easily talk about. And now we've started to talk about, and of course it's not easily accepted. Some people are opposed to it. In fact, just the other day, I met a friend of mine and I just said to him that, you know, I've changed my own view about gay marriages, and I accept it. He just held my lips and he closed his. He says, no, don't speak that.
I think an interesting comment is South Asians of the 21st century, I think we're still coming to grips with heterosexuality.
Yeah.
Homosexuality is still down the path here. So I found when this whole conversation came up, and a lot of it has been centered on the Sikh community because it's trickled all the way back to Amritsar, and I find it amazing that that these conversations are now dinner place conversations, where in the Sikh community now, these kind of issues are coming to the forefront, and I think it's dealing with a level of maturity that the next generation youth are having, saying, we can talk about these issues.
I want to, only because the subject of gay marriage came up, I'm shifting the ground out of the conversation just a little bit because I'm so anxious to hear what you'll have to say about the attempt on the part of politicians to take issues like these and appeal to your communities, not as Canadians, I don't think, but as, well, in one case, Sikh Canadians.
Yeah.
How do we feel about the way politicians are addressing you in their hunger for your collective vote?
It does a terrible disservice, not just to South Asian Canadians, but to the Canadian political process itself. I don't think any, and I'm very much a Liberal, cut me and I will bleed red, but I don't think any of the political parties, including my own, have covered themselves in glory in their behavior in the past few elections. There's been a manifest attempt by all the political parties to exploit visible minority communities without integrating them. And indeed, I should go so far as to say that the means of exploitation perpetuates the disenfranchisement of these communities. By treating people as nothing more than a block of votes, you're treating the individual members like so many heads of cattle. And to a certain extent, I think that there are leaders, so-called leaders, within the South Asian community who have to take a great deal of responsibility for having delivered the community into the hands of such people. Because, in effect, historically, the way this has worked is that a political party or a political operative will find an ethnic power baron in a local region who will say, elevate me, serve me, stroke my ego, and I will deliver my people to you.
Take me to your leader, kind of thing, yes.
But that sort of behavior is predicated on the assumption that the individuals he's delivering up to the ballot box are people who can be disregarded as individuals and hence forgotten about the day after the election.
Very interesting. The people who we were talking to this morning had a great deal to say about the new generation of South Asians. We'll be hearing more from them coming up in the next hour as our panel explores the diversity within the South Asian community and how immigrants often bring the politics and tensions of their homeland with them to Canada. It is South Asian Heritage Month. In a few years, it could be South Asian Heritage Year we're celebrating. StatsCan tells us that by 2017, more than 1 million South Asians will call this city home, making Toronto the biggest Western center of that diaspora. Last week, I had a conversation with some South Asian Torontonians. I wanted to get a sense of what it's important to them as their community continues its phenomenal growth. And we're playing bits of that conversation throughout the program this morning. Our guests are Nita Bawa, who co-hosts a radio program broadcast in Hindi and Punjabi. Kulveer Singh Gill is a young professional with a major mining company. Amita Handa, a professor at the U of T. Rima Kaur works at Omni Television. Srinivas Krishna is a filmmaker, and Akash Maharaj, the former National Policy Chair of the Liberal Party of Canada. In this segment of Visible Majority, Toronto's growing South Asian community, the talk is about diversity within the community and how political and religious tensions from that part of the world play out here. Srinivas Krishna's 1991 film Masala was inspired by the Air India disaster, and he began by explaining why this tragedy resonates so deeply, for him.
Air India is a very meaningful event in my life because I lost friends on that flight. And anyone, I think, who came at the time that we did in the early 70s or late 60s, like Amita, I know you did too, I think we all lost friends on that flight.
And it was a very small world then.
It was indeed, much smaller.
The South Asian community.
Yeah. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people came during the 80s and 90s. At that time, it was a very small community. So when that happened, it was, I mean, on top of all the distress, we just realized that whatever, I mean, we were kids who grew up in Toronto, and we realized that whatever our parents had left behind had come back to whack us over here. And this is something that I've, you know, deeply resented since then as part of my adult life as a Canadian. I mean, I was 21 when that happened, that people should import violences from homelands to Canada. When you come here, you leave it behind.
You're speaking as a Hindu.
No, I'm speaking as a Canadian.
Okay, oh, thank you. I couldn't help bringing that up, I'm sorry, because I'm going to now put Kulveer Singh Gill on the spot. Those divisions then were very dramatic between Hindu and Sikh. Perhaps less so now, it's a different world we live in. But again, we're talking about the political divisions that exist between these worlds that you all come from.
I think we need to be very careful in differentiating between conflicts or differences of opinion between communities and those of individuals. I think we get into these notions that Sikhs and Hindus or whatever minority groups are at each other's throats and they can't stand the sight of each other. Those are ridiculous notions here. Communities and certain parties can have differences with different points of view. But as individuals, man, we work together, we live together. We're Canadian ahead of anything else. In terms of specific conflicts, I think one of the beauties of Canada, as it has evolved, and I think to more recently, is that people will bring over their differences. You can't deny that. That's what really recognizes somebody's personality and their identity. But in Canada, I think, different than the rest of the world, is we're coming to a point, slowly but surely, of where these differences are aired out in a form of opinion, of discussion, of talking, and not really picking up a stick and fighting, where you see that more and more in other countries. I think Canada has a different point of view on that.
Amita?
I was just going to say that I don't like that sort of line of argument that, okay, you know what, why are you guys importing your troubles from back home? You're here now, and so therefore, why are you bringing your dirty laundry with you? I think that's kind of unavoidable because I think in some ways we have to be sensitive to each other's histories, and sometimes there are going to be things, historical things, that I might not understand because I didn't grow up in communal violence. So when my parents sometimes talk about, you know, this Hindu-Muslim divide, for example, it's something that's not emotionally tangible for me. It's something that seems, why are they sort of harping on this old point?
There's one, you know, airing and tolerating communities, you know, the dirty laundry of communities is one thing. Mass murder is another thing.
Yes.
So I think we have to draw the difference. And by the same token, we also have to accept that you cannot enjoy the benefits of community and the identity that comes with that without also taking responsibility for it. I think when that murder happened, it happened in the name of community and in the name of nation. It's, yes, a tragedy that was visited upon communities, but by the same token, it came from within communities.
Kulveer Singh Gill.
I'm resenting a little of the underlying assumptions you're making there. So, you know, I said this was an act that was condoned by the community. This was an act of individuals that may have been in concert with others, but in no means was any community supporting this
but
act.
Well,
no one is proposing that there was a solid community, but there were significant members in the community who approved of it as equally as there were people who did not. I'm not presuming that there is a solid community.
I think you know something that the RCMP doesn't. If you would present those names to the RCMP, I'm sure they'd be happy to hear that.
These differences of opinion are real, but I sense we're uncomfortable with them. We would like not to have to disagree about
any of this. Conversation is extremely politically correct around this table, but I think you get into a cab with a Sikh driver and he'll tell you, you know, it was the Indian government that blew that up, or on and on and on. These theories come about. I think you have to acknowledge somewhere, and it's that lack of acknowledgement that is troublesome. You know, that you want to say, yeah, this happened, we're sorry, there are nuts amongst us, like there are nuts amongst everyone, agreed.
Yeah, but
the constant defensing and denial is what's really troublesome.
But I don't understand why, okay, because there could be political differences within a community.
Indeed, there are.
So there might be, say, what we might think, oh, these people are extremists or fanatics or whatever. Why does the entire community
be
responsible for that? Because there's still acts of individuals within that community.
But we know for a fact that those people, okay, that fundamentalism of any kind is difficult in a society like this, okay? And that Sikh fundamentalism was party to, you know, Air India. We have to deal with this, you know? I'm not accusing a community. I'm saying, but what I don't respect is denial.
What do you think is being denied, though? That's what I'm not sure about.
The denial of community responsibility.
Mm.
If you want to keep your dirty laundry, you have to clean it yourself, then.
But it was not a community responsibility. How can you hold a community responsible for something that was done by an individual?
We're not
it's like 911.
Community responsible, but the community.
You just said, you know, take responsibility. So how can a community take? I mean, of course, it's horrible.
Because
that
everyone
it happened.
Has cousins, everyone has family, and everyone has debates. And somewhere you have to. And this is what the meaning of community is. It exists between individuals who claim commonality.
Some of the voices from our South Asian panel coming up. Their thoughts on how the South Asian community is portrayed in the mainstream media. If you have been listening this morning, you will know that we have been playing excerpts from a conversation I had last week with people from Toronto's South Asian community. As part of Asian Heritage Month, we wanted to touch base to find out what matters to them as their community continues to grow. So we reintroduce our panel again. Nita Bawa co-hosts a call-in radio program in Hindi and Punjabi called Asian Connections. Kulveer Singh Gill is a director of the Sikh Centennial Foundation. Dr. Amita Handa is a professor at the U of T. Rima Kaur is a journalist. Srinivas Krishna is a filmmaker. And Akash Maharaj, the former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada. In this excerpt, A Visible Majority, Toronto's Growing South Asian Community, our panel talks about how they are portrayed on mainstream TV, radio, and in the newspapers. Rima Kaur works at Omni Television and also has worked for Maclean's magazine. She starts by explaining what drew her to a career in journalism.
The whole reason I got into the media was to provide a voice that has not been heard. At the time when I graduated journalism, there were very, very few South Asians who were going into journalism school. And now I just see this huge blowout of young South Asians in journalism school coming out, calling me for internships and co-ops and all that.
Rima, I feel the same as you. As a filmmaker, when I started out, there were no actors even to cast. I mean, in the movie that I was making at that time, which is an Indian movie called Masala, or Indian subject movie. Today, I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's theater companies and other filmmakers who are calling me for internships and the like. So, in a sense, it's, you see the change and you realize, you know, you're kind of getting older too, which is a depressing fact.
Dr. Handa?
In terms of the media representation of South Asians, sometimes I do feel disappointed by it because I think, I mean, what you get to hear is, okay, South Asians are terrorists, they're gang members, it's full of communal strife, the community, there's repressed daughters. And while that all might be true and that's part of the community, but it's disproportionately represented. So we get a skewed view, a stereotypical sometimes view of the community.
Well, I want to pick up with Nita Bawa because we've talked on our program, for instance, about violence against women and the suppression of this subject within the South Asian community. When we address that issue and the rest of you hear that discussed on the radio, are you thinking, oh, good, they're paying attention to a matter of consequence to us, or oh, bad, because as Dr. Handa just suggested, they're emphasizing the bad?
I'm not sure. I guess, you'll have to answer because my focus is addressing domestic violence within the South Asian community. I'm not sure how others view it because where I come from is that from a religious point of view is that our Granth teaches equality amongst men and women. And that's what I go and talk about is that there is something that we read, but we don't follow. But I'm not sure if I were to say Eddie, on air, how would you?
If you were to tell me on air, which you told us off air, that slapping a wife is no big deal in India, for instance, and this kind of behavior is imported to Canada, if I were to say that, not you, would you experience that differently than you would if it were coming from someone within your own?
Yes, community? I absolutely would. I absolutely would view it differently. Because, again, talking to them, talking about real life experiences of women who come and talk to me, it's, you know, they have taken abuse for so long before they actually come and report it. And some don't even report it for all their lives. And they just live with it because it is accepted.
Well, that's one issue among many. But again, as consumers of media, and I'm talking about the so-called mainstream media, do you feel your world, the world we're here to explore this morning, is adequately or accurately covered?
I think those issues that Nita has talked about, I think absolutely those are the issues that need to be discussed. There's too much ethnic media on the air right now that is filled with Bollywood songs and Bhangra songs and nice fluffy commercials for Indian wedding clothes and not enough real discussion internally of what are the real issues that matter, domestic violence, immigration issues, things like that. But I think when it comes to the mainstream media, you're dealing with a much larger crowd. And with the discussion of these very sensitive topics, there needs to be a level of responsibility on part of the media to make sure they're dealing with it properly.
These serious topics like domestic violence and all these things, I think people are just afraid to talk about it because our community is full of so many passionate people who will get very angry. And I think right now, media is trying to be politically correct. We're trying to not step on so many toes. And by getting into a lot of these issues, it flares up a lot of emotions.
There's also an element in the media coverage of South Asian issues, South Asian Canadian issues, of what are the problems besetting this community? What are the barriers? What are the issues? What is it that South Asian Canadians want of Canada? There's very little in the way of the perspective of what is it South Asian Canadians want to do for Canada? Because I would say that the lack of representation, not just in the media, but throughout the public sphere, is bad for the community, but bad for the country. I think there's no denying that that South Asians who immigrated to Canada sacrificed a great deal and went through an enormous amount of trial and tribulation. But their children, the people around this table, represent some of the most, I mean, by some measures, South Asians born in Canada are the most literate group of scale in the country, with the highest level of tertiary education and the highest rate of professionalism. And with all those assets, with all those privileges, comes a great burden of responsibility to reinvest in the country that made it possible. And when we're unable to do that, that just doesn't have negative consequences on the South Asian community. It denies us our right and indeed our responsibility to further the national interest.
Every time there's a crime committed and I see it reported on the news, my first reaction is, please, please don't let this be a black person. Please, please don't let this be a Muslim person. Please, please don't let this be a South Asian person who killed their wife. Because now, it doesn't mean that we don't have to, as a community, talk about issues of, say, domestic violence or terrorism or ethnic strife or whatever it is. But there's obviously something going wrong in terms of representation, in terms of media representation.
Our South Asian community panel weighing in on how they are portrayed in the media. Coming up, we'll conclude our conversation by talking about their hopes for the future as the Toronto South Asian community continues to grow. And I couldn't be listening to this morning without telling you about a book you might want to read, an absolutely brilliant novel, which was so well received when it came out in hardcover. Desirable Daughters is now out in paperback. I'm halfway through it. Bharati Mukherjee, who of course at one time lived along with Clark Blaze, her husband, in Toronto, is now in the States, begins her novel rather promisingly with the marriage a century and a half ago of a five-year-old child to a tree in East Bengal. You might wonder why a five-year-old would be married to a tree. And in order to understand this, you will understand everything about this little girl's descendants winding up in this case in California and trying to build a life for themselves in the middle of a culture that doesn't always understand the one they came from. It's called Desirable Daughters, Bharati Mukherjee. It's wonderful, absolutely marvelous. In just over 10 years from now, the South Asian community will grow to become the largest single visible minority group in Toronto. The prediction from StatsCan that by 2017, more than 1 million South Asians will call Toronto home, making this city, again, the largest diaspora in the West. All morning, as part of Asian Heritage Month, we've been hearing our panel of South Asians talk about identity, finding a voice, and the quest for more representation in politics and the media. Nita Bawak hosts a call-in radio program broadcast in Hindi and Punjabi called Asian Connections. Kulveer Singh Gill is a director of the Sikh Centennial Foundation. Dr. Amita Handa is a professor at the U of T. Rima Kaur is a journalist. Srinivas Krishna, a filmmaker, and Akash Maharaj, the former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada. In this final segment of Visible Majority, Toronto's growing South Asian community, our guests talk about the implications of Toronto soon becoming the biggest center of that South Asian diaspora.
What you're seeing now is this coming together of the different cultures, and we talk lots about it, but I think our generation is the big crisis for us is how are we reconciling where our parents are from, where we're from, with where we are today. And for me, I saw a great example of the future of Canada. I grew up in Calgary as well, and last year in the Stanley Cup run, where the Flames, you know, it seems decades ago, but when the Flames were well on their way to almost winning the Stanley Cup, and afterwards they lost, but they had this great parade downtown, and they had the Olympic Plaza. And the news reporters were there going there asking people their opinions. And they came across this big, huge Sikh guy with this enormous turban and the biggest Flames jersey I'd ever seen. and they talked to him, not about what is it like to be a Sikh or what are the challenges you're facing in this country or does it bemoan you to be the only Sikh guy in this crowd?
How do you like those Flames?
It was all about the Flames. And I think the day that we can start talking, the day I come onto the show to talk about my favorite movie or what's happening with politics is the day that I think that, you know, that'll be a defining moment.
I just want to add something. When I came to Canada in 1996 and I went to a shopping mall or went for a job interview, I was it was, you know, amazing how everybody would ask me, when did you move to Canada? I said, just about a month or 2 months ago. Oh, you speak English very well. And little do they realize that India is one of the largest speaking, you know, English spoken countries in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's something that has changed. I hope so it has changed, that people will realize that, you know, we are one of the largest speaking, English speaking country.
And as long as we're talking about largest right now, we are on the cusp of this city becoming the largest center of the South Asian diaspora on the planet. What's this going to mean, Akash?
Well, I think the biggest change will be within the South Asian community itself, simply because it will no longer be possible to speak as of South Asians being a marginalized minority. And when I think about as a South Asian by ethnicity, as a North American by resident, as a Canadian by birth, when I think about my heroes, I think about people like Gandhi, like Martin Luther King Jr., like Pierre Trudeau, and each of them in their generation did great things that made the world a better place. I think the difference will be that when the eyes of future generations are upon us and ask us, what is it that you did with all of your advantages to make the world a better place? Mm-hmm. We'll be able to hold our heads high before the judgment of history, because we were the first generation of South Asian Canadians who were Canadians first.
Rima?
I think as we grow as a community, we'll get into more areas like arts and culture, and not just medicine, law, and engineering. And probably as we get bigger and bigger, we'll be in more decision-making positions. So there'll be more of a discourse with the mainstream.
Srinivas?
My experience, I think it really charts the experience of the South Asians in a very particular way. I was the first filmmaker, first person of my generation not to become a doctor, lawyer, or an engineer. Mm. You know, I started making movies and making plays and then movies. The first movie I made, Masala, you know, did really well and kind of talked about Asians, I mean, sorry, South Asians in Canada. And it's a film that's loved and equally hated by many people. Loved by a lot of Canadians, hated by a lot of South Asians for all the dirty laundry that it airs in public. And so it's really a matter of the stories that we tell, you know, to each other. And
having as yourself broken through to become what you say is the first South Asian filmmaker, you feel that progress has been made? Is it going to be acceptable, as Rima suggested, for your children or everybody else's children to not be engineers, doctors, and academics?
That's not the reason why I started being a filmmaker, but it certainly is, I hope, one of the consequences of it, you know?
Amita?
I've been hearing a lot recently about, you know, the new sort of statistics that have come out that are saying, okay, the South Asian community is going to be the largest visible minority community by 2007, and we have 50,000 youth already that are South Asian in the GTA. And it's interesting hearing community reaction. It's like this one of pride. Okay, you know what, we're sort of like the first, you know, some of us were pioneers and some of us now are going to be part of the largest community here. But to me, that in a way, that's not enough to be proud of. I mean, just to comment on what Akash was saying, I would hope that we still think about how do we make this a better place, a better world. Just because I'm the first or the largest doesn't mean anything in and of itself to be proud of.
And I think the difference for us is that every generation of immigrants thinks about, you know, if we are to be worthy heirs to the sacrifice of our parents, we have to be good stewards for our children. But by the same token, I think that the community, South Asian community, is maturing to the point that we now realize that we look not just to a better world for our own children, but we think that, you know, if it's not good enough for our children, it shouldn't be good enough for anyone's children.
We can only ever understand a collectivity by listening to its voices one by one by one. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andy.
If you'd like to know more about the panelists who've been part of Visible Majority, Toronto's growing South Asian community, and to hear excerpts from our discussion this morning in honor of South Asian Heritage Month, please visit the Metro Morning website, cbc.ca/metromorning, and click on Features.